So we got a little review for everyone. If you've been here past couple weeks, you know what's coming, all right? So we've been asking this question that we have been looking at over the past 3 weeks together, and we've asked the question, what makes you happy? And we have two pretty standard answers that we've offered, okay? So I need you to yell those out when I ask this question, all right? It's okay to yell in church. I checked with Jesus before service today, and he said it was cool. It was great if you do that. So what makes you happy? Answer number one is... No thing. So good. Nothing makes you no thing makes you happy is kind of the key idea there, that if we're looking for stuff to make us happy, we are going to find ourselves very, very disappointed people. And the second thing we've said is, what else makes you happy? Sewing. That's right. Not the kind with a needle and thread, but the kind that you do, you know, like sewing into the soil kind of sewing. That happiness is not something that is often instantaneous. It's something that we find in as an end part of a process over time, that when we live our lives in a consistent direction, that we can discover and find happiness. And so we've talked about happiness coming from three key areas of peace. Does anyone remember all three areas? Extra points if you can. Oh, it's like a marriage, right? That's so good, so good. Yeah, peace with God. Peace with others, peace with... Oh, what a happy marriage right there. You're so godly right now. So happiness always comes from peace, and peace primarily with peace with God, as we talked last week, peace with other people around us, and also peace with ourselves, right? The idea that I can actually live with myself. Jesus commanded us, love your neighbor as yourself, and it's hard to love your neighbor well if you're kind of unsettled with yourself. And so... today, we are going to talk about something that I think is a touch point for our world around us, and probably maybe even for many of us. Because I think if we were to ask just the average person, if you were to walk outside right now and walk down the street or, you know, go to a shop on Capitol Circle somewhere, and you ask people this question of what makes you happy, my feeling is you would probably get two answers from people. And the two answers would be some form of what would make me happy would be more money and more toys. That those would be the two kind of things I'm searching for. More money and more toys. And we feel like just more stuff, more financial resources would make us happy. And certainly, you know, there's something to be said, right, for having a financial resources to, as my father would always put, you know, it's nice to eat, sleep, and live indoors, son. That's what he'd always say. I'm like, yeah, it is very nice. He usually said that when he's threatening me that I would not be eating, sleeping, or living indoors because something stupid I had just done. But I think that's the average thing that we kind of think when we think about happiness. And what's kind of funny about that is that those two things are both locked up in things. And we just began this, you know, day by saying what makes us happy is no thing. Yet we get so easily deluded and distracted and into this thought pattern where we think, oh, yeah, if I get more stuff and more things, that's going to be the thing that makes me happy, only often to discover at the end that's not really how life works. And that's often not really the case. And specifically when we talk about money, I think a couple things make it really tricky for us to do. The first thing that makes it really tricky for us to talk about money is a what that you use for whose. Okay, that's very Dr. Seussie, so I'll say that again. It's a what that you use for whose. In other words, money is a what that I use as a way to love and care for the somebodies in my life, the who's in my life, isn't it, right? That money is a very practical way that I do that. But the problem is along the way, it is so easy, at least for me, to get distracted into thinking that money is the end game and stuff is the end game. And all of a sudden, that this what I use to show love for the who's in my life, it just becomes an end in and of itself. It just becomes, it's just its own thing. My dad is a really godly guy I respect a lot. I'm so grateful. I have like the greatest parents in the world. And my dad would frequently use this phrase a lot when I was growing up. We'd have, you know, talks with dad, you know, and it'd be like you're driving home or you're doing yard work or something like that. And, you know, it's like life lessons with dad time. And he'd look and he'd say, son, your mother and I just want you to have it better off than what we had growing up. And maybe your parents said something similar to you at some point, and I'm very thankful for that. You know, my parents provide a lot for my sister and I. My parents also had pretty rough upbringing. They came from homes with mom and dad, both of whom had really tough blue-collar jobs, oftentimes like they're, you know, latchkey kids, no one's at home, and They worked a lot of hours for very little money. My dad's dad was an alcoholic. My mom's brother has severe mental illness, and so that created a real huge financial strain for the families. So I understand why my dad is so concerned, but every time my dad would talk about, we just want you to have it better off than what we had, I knew that the primary thing my dad had in mind was money. And while that's important and while that's great, I think part of that is kind of susceptible to that whole American dream thing, isn't it? That we think, well, more money and more stuff is going to make me happy. And here's kind of the second thing, is talking about money and having money is tricky because it is a what connected to a who, and that who is you, and it's me. And something that Jesus is going to say that we'll look at today is, it highlights something I think we already get, which is that our money is incredibly personal because our money is a personal expression of what matters to us. And whether I have a lot of money or a little bit of money, none of us really like it when people tell us what to do with our money, in part because we're Americans. You know, don't tell me what to do, you know. But secondly, because we understand our money is this expression of what matters to us. And in the same way that if you're a creative-oriented person, you know, if you draw or if you, like, write a song or a poem or something and you present it to people, that's the scariest moment of your life, isn't it? Because it's like all my inside thoughts and actions and beliefs are, like, on this piece of paper. You're going to criticize it. Oh, my gosh. And it's the same way I feel like when I finish preaching. I'm like, don't talk. Just don't tell me anything about this. Talk to anything about the sermon, you know? In that same way, when we use our money, it's an expression of something that is inside of us coming out of us. It's a statement of our personal values, and for that reason, it makes it really sensitive. And of course, in our culture, we get money wrapped up in all these other ridiculous conversations too, right? We shame people for not having enough money. We say, oh, it's because you're lazy, when of course we know that's not the case, right? People can just be down on their luck, and that's hard, you know? So we add these weird cultural narratives to that. You know, of course, we've got stuff in our world right now, right? Like people have a lot of money, and the gap between people with a lot of money and a little money keeps growing wider and wider and wider, and that kind of makes us angry and mad and frustrated with the system. Or maybe you kind of feel like, you know, my grandparents did, right? I work really hard, and I have a tough job, and, you know, I make, like, nothing for it, you know? And that makes me really mad. But the idea is, with money, whether a lot or a little, Jesus actually says, you and I can be happy with money. That's not actually an oxymoron. And what's interesting to me is the audience that Jesus originally spoke to about this 2,000 years ago was a group of day laborers. This was a hand-to-mouth society. This is a world in which the people that Jesus is talking to, they didn't have Roth IRAs and 401ks, and they didn't have a savings account or a checking account, and they didn't have any of the things that we have today. These are people where it's like, literally, I need to work today if my family's going to eat, because that's the kind of society they lived in. You know, people didn't have a lot of wealth unless you were, you know, the special, you know, ruler kind of class people, okay? And so Jesus is, if you feel like, man, I'm kind of hard up on money, I don't have a lot of money, I'm a college student, or I'm just working hard and I feel like I got not a whole lot of money to show for it, Jesus is actually talking to you. He's talking to me, because the people Jesus talked to were not people who, like, oh, let me diversify my investment portfolio. like investment portfolio, what is that, you know? And so Jesus is going to say these words to us about money that I want us to look at here today. So starting in Matthew chapter 6, here's what Jesus says about money. He says, do not store up for yourselves. And I just want to stop here for a second to observe. You know what store up is? That is a phrase, that's a sowing phrase, isn't it? Because storing up isn't something you do overnight. Storing up is something that happens over time. I make a decision to take that $50 and put it in a savings account. I make a decision to take that extra that was actually left over at the end of the month, and I actually put it in my retirement plan that work gives me. Or you can be like my grandpa. You know, my grandpa, any extra money he made from the business that he ran went in this Hills Brothers coffee can that sat in his safe, okay? And like we're like, whoa, great. He opened it up one time. We're like, Grandpa, you're like a millionaire. You know, he's got all this money in the coffee can. You know, like however that works, storing up, that is a good thing, but it's not an immediate thing. It's something you do over time. And one of the reasons I'm so passionate about is having a consistent conversation about money every few months is because more than any other area in our lives, managing your money incorrectly in a one-time decision can do months and years of damage. And I could show you 5, 10, 15 examples in my life where a one-time decision to put something on Visa, right, a one-time decision to use my student loans for something other than, you know, I was more into the loan part than the student part, you know, with my student loan, you know, and so I got into that, you know, one time I did that, right, one missed thing, and all of a sudden it became a problem. All right, and I have things that have been on, you know, that I bought one time with Visa, and I took 2 years to pay it off, okay? Because that's how money works. One bad decision can undo a lot of good things in your life. And that's why I think Jesus is so passionate about helping us see this issue and why I want us not to miss it. So Jesus continues. He says, "Don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal." Don't buy stuff. Don't put your treasure in stuff, Jesus says, in stuff in this world where it's just going to corrode or rot or get stolen or go away. And then he continues on. He contrasts it. He says, "But store up," there's that sowing word again, "for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal." And Jesus right here is laying out for us that happy people know where to invest their money. And the where you invest your money is not with some fancy stock or mutual fund or, you know, my buddy Frank, you know, he's doing this thing and you should totally get in, and definitely not the NCAA office pool that's going to come up in a month, okay? Jesus says wise people and happy people with money know where to invest it, and the where you and I should invest it is in things that go beyond this world. And things that are beyond just you. And things that advance what Jesus called the kingdom of heaven. Things that advance the reign and the rule of God. Jesus' little, you know, I always come up with like these little silly rhymey phrases to try and help you remember. Jesus says investing beyond you is a great thing to do. So look at that, yeah. So investing beyond you is a great thing to do, Jesus says. And then he tells us why in the very next verse. And maybe you've heard this verse before. Jesus says, "Because where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." And what Jesus is establishing for us is it is impossible for my heart and the thing I care the most about to be separated from where my money goes. Because by nature, where my money goes is where stuff I care about is. Okay? And just think about this, right? Think about like the top three or four things that you invest your money in each month, each week, each year. Isn't it true that those are things that carry a disproportionate amount of importance to you? So like about 6 or 9 months ago, the air conditioning unit in our apartment like went on the fritz, and it was just like dripping everywhere from under the baseboard in the wall between our kitchen and bedroom and bathroom, and you would have swore a plane went down in our house. It was DEFCON 5, or DEFCON 1. I can never remember which one the worst one is. But anyway, I was like going around, I'm like freaking out. You know, we've got fans and all this kind of stuff going. And it was like a 2 week long thing until maintenance finally was able to, you know, like fix it for us. Thank goodness we live in an apartment and maintenance is their problem, not ours, but it was our problem sort of too. And what I think is interesting is I don't really care a whole lot about our apartment. I mean, it's an apartment, right? Like we're by nature not owning it. That's why it's an apartment, okay? And yet still, it's where I spend all my, like a huge chunk of my money each month, right? Is paying for this place where we live, right? And though I care very little about it, and one day we're going to move out, and it's like, you can blow it up for all I care. I don't, you know, just make sure the people aren't in it, you know? That's all I care about. Like I'm still just wrapped up in that. Right? If you got like a car or something like that, you know, and it's brand new and you're paying, you know, like big money on the lease, right? And you're kind of wrapped up in that. You know, think about parents, like your kids, you know, it's like no one said, man, I really want to have a responsible use of my money. I'm going to have a kid, you know, like that's going to be great. That's like, we're not going to throw any money at that, you know, but of course you care about your children, right? And one of the ways you show that is by the money that you invest in that, okay? And what Jesus is saying is, hey, where your treasure goes is where your heart is naturally going to go. And a lot of times, I'll have to confess something to you. When I talk about this verse with people, I get like all Baptist preachery, you know, and so where is your heart? You know, and I get all like guilt-inducing, which is great. You know, Jesus really loves it when we do that. But here's why I think Jesus is so, wants us to see this. It's because Jesus understands that wherever my heart is, if my heart is in something in this world, by nature, it's going to be impossible for me to experience and to have peace. Because things in this world rot and they fade and they cause us anxiety and worry and fear, and I'm always wrapped up in getting the newest one or the next one or preserving my current one, okay? a few years ago, like 2010, 2011, my car I was driving finally bit the dust. And so I had to buy a new car. And so I bought the Honda Civic. Her name is Phoebe. Thank you for asking. I still drive it to this day. I got a great deal on it. My dad worked in the car sales business at the time, so he got me this really great loan with very low interest on it. It was good. It's brand new. It's the biggest purchase I ever made in my life. I think it probably still is the biggest purchase I've ever made in my life. And so I purchased this car, and I'm not a car guy. I barely know where the engine is in the car, and new car smell is a real thing. If you get a new car, that is, I'm like, take that in. Yeah, so that Honda Civic right there. So beautiful, you know. And so I drove it around. I thought it was, you know, hot stuff in my little Honda Civic. You know, super. I was like a cool Chicagoan, you know. And it was nice knowing my car would actually turn on in the winter now. That was really good in Chicago. And so about 6 months or so in, I was leaving the gym one day. I was really exhausted from my workout. And the gym where I worked out at was in the strip mall, and the only way I know how to describe the strip mall is hell. It must have been designed, if you've ever been to the TJ Maxx up on the north side of town, where there's like the Trader Joe's and there's like a Starbucks in there. It's like basically, whoever designed that strip mall is like Satan or a serial killer. Those are the only two options, because every time I've went there, my happiness has been, you know, it's just like down, you know. I'm all getting an accident almost every time. And so in this strip mall parking lot, I was going the wrong way in a one-way lane. I was that guy, I'm sorry. And so a car is turning, coming forward toward me in the right way, you know. And so I saw a group of spaces I'd be able to kind of pull my car into to let them go around me and park and that kind of thing. And so I went to pull my car in right there, but I underestimated how big my car was. And so I dragged it across the bumper of this minivan that was parked there. And now Phoebe had a boo-boo. And because I'm not a car guy and cheap, and at the time was like 22, so you know, even if I didn't want to be cheap, I didn't know how not to. Phoebe was just going to have a boo-boo forever. You know, sorry, Phoebe, there went your arm, you know, or whatever, right? And so I have this huge, huge dent on the car. And what made me laugh is about 2 weeks later, I'm talking to a friend. They had walked in. They're like, "Where'd that dent on your car come from? You know, that's strange." And so I was telling them the story, and I laughed because I was saying, "You know what? It's kind of funny. Like now that my car's banged up a little bit, I'm not worried about it anymore. It's great. You know, like it's fine. It doesn't damage the car. The car drives fine. Everything's gonna be okay with it. And now I'm not worried about getting nicked up or anything anymore." And I think it's like a practical illustration of this thing that Jesus spoke about, that when your heart is in things in this world, they're going to corrupt and rot and fade and pass away. Guess what happens? You experience anxiety. You lose peace because you're all wrapped up in trying to maintain and keep and all these kind of things. So if you leave this sermon with nothing else, just go out and just take a bat to your car. Yeah, that's what I'm telling you right there. That's the next step. Yeah. No, what I'm telling you is don't let your heart go to things in this world, because that's by nature going to undermine your peace, and it's going to undermine your happiness. Now, Jesus isn't done. And so he continues on, and he says this in the next verse. He says, "The eye is the lamp of the body. And if your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light." And immediately we're like, okay, Jesus. Oh, now it's an optometry lesson. Thank you, you know. And then he says, "But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness." And what Jesus is using is this picture that they used to use 2,000 years ago of like your eye and your heart were connected. And what Jesus is kind of saying is your eye looks at whatever your heart wants it to look at. And so if your eye is kind of constantly taken by the stuff of this world, it's going to fill you with darkness. It's going to fill you with worldliness. But if your eye is taken by opportunities to be generous, opportunities to advance God's kingdom in this world, it will fill your body with light, Jesus is kind of saying. So he's kind of trying to reiterate, I guess, the last point he made about storing up treasure in heaven. Because he says, hey, you know, if the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? That's not going to work out well for you in the end. And then Jesus says this thing that is so, so huge, so important for us to see. He says, no one can serve two masters. And here's what no one means. No one. Okay? A really big case study. What that means is you are subject to what Jesus is going to say. You aren't going to outwit him, outsmart him. You aren't so young you can sneak one by him. You aren't so old you can outwise him, okay? Every single person you're ever eyeball to eyeball with is going to be subject to the thing that Jesus says. That's why he said, no one, okay? No one can serve two masters. What masters are you talking about, Jesus? Well, so glad you asked, Crossbridge Christian Church. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to one and despise the other. If you've ever worked at a job where you had two bosses, you know that's exactly how it works, right? There's the boss you like, and the boss that's like, oh my gosh, Fred is calling again, you know? And then Jesus brings it all together and he makes his point. You cannot serve both God and money. Which is really interesting, because I feel like if Jesus is going to set God against someone, it would be Satan. You know, you can't serve God and the devil, you know, and you could do like that. You know, like, Jesus, God and money, and Jesus is like, yeah, God and money. Jesus actually uses this word, mammon, and it's like this name that was an all-encompassing word for not just your money, but all of your possessions and your worldly stuff. And the reason Jesus uses that word mammon, I think, is because he's trying to say both money and stuff, but also he's kind of like trying to personify your stuff, right? You can either bow at the altar of God, or you can bow at the altar of the God of your stuff. But you have to pick one. You have to choose one. Maybe the way we would say it today is you can have God, or you can have the almighty dollar, but you can't have both of them. So choose wisely, is Jesus' words. Now, here's why this is so important. You and I, whether we have a lot of money or a little bit of money, are going to direct it somewhere, okay? It is going to end up somewhere in someone's hands. And what we do with our money is we promise it away. And that's understandable, again, because you want to eat, sleep, and live indoors, right? So I'm going to promise some of it to my mortgage company or to my landlord, okay? If you have a car and you're still paying that off, right, you promise some of that there, or a student loan or however that is. But what happens is, we promise so much of our money away that our money actually starts to become the boss of us, doesn't it? And I have lived here. I'm not speaking down to you. I am you, okay? I understand this, right? Because what happens is I promise a little bit of my money to Bank America and a little bit of my money to Honda Motor Finance and a lot of money to Sally Mae and Navient and all that over there, okay? And I give away some of my money over here into this thing and that and this, you know, Netflix subscription and that magazine subscription to, you know, I'm never really actually look at, but, you know, I like to have Harvard Business Review so people think I'm the kind of person that reads Harvard Business Review, you know? And so I got that there. All right, and we just promise our money away. And after a while, our money begins to tell us what to do instead of us telling our money what we want it to do. And in fact, some of you might be in this spot. Again, I've been here before. I actually promised more money away than I was allowed to, right? You know? And that's what we call debt, okay? That's the word for that, right? And so I didn't have the money, so I called my buddy Visa, and I said, hey, Visa. Hey, boo, how you doing, girl? You know, how about you spot me $300 now, and I'll spot you $3,000 later? Yeah, like that's how it kind of ends up working out, right? With interest and all this stuff. That's a really bad interest rate if it's that bad. But yeah, you know, it's like, hey, like think about this, right? I am so desperate for stuff now, I will pay three times as much for it later. Okay, that's crazy. That's tomfoolery. That's the first time someone said tomfoolery in 12 years, right there, probably. That's wow. That's the behavior of someone who worships at the altar of money, isn't it? Because who else would do that kind of thing? Who else would be driven by that kind of thing? I understand not all the debt we go into is bad debt, right? Like, there are different gradations, and sometimes life happens, and, you know, like, I get that, okay? I'm not trying to condemn. But what I'm trying to say is, man, if we are not prepared with a good financial strategy, if we aren't working our money, you know, making it work for us instead of us working for it, that'll undermine your peace, because here's what happens. My peace with other people gets eroded because all of a sudden now I owe them money. And God, the guy who at the beginning of this transaction said, don't buy it, don't lease it, don't do it. Now, when I make that promise because God values faithfulness, now God actually switches and he's not on my side anymore. Now he's on the side of the person I owe money to. Because God's about us making wise financial decisions, and God is also about us honoring commitments. And so the very same God who at one point was on one side saying, don't buy it, don't do it, don't lease it, don't own it. Now when I do that, and I say, I told you, now you got to pay. You know, now you got to do something with it, right? You got to do that, right? It, 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 causes a lack in peace with other people because now I owe them money, right? That's never a good place to be. Causes a lack of peace in ourselves. I don't know anything that causes me more anxiety than knowing I have bills to pay and I'm not sure how I'm going to pay them. Right? That is an anxious place to be. And if you've been there, you know, yeah, that, there are a lot of adjectives I'd use to describe that season in my life. Peace is not one of them, right? But it also undermines my peace with God. Because what happens is now when I interact with needs in this world that I sense God cares about and God wants me to be a part of showing his care about, I can't respond. And I have that family member who's got that medical emergency and I want to be able to help him out. And I have that thing I saw on TV, right, and the kid knocked on my door and they were like, you know, hey, we're raising money for this walkathon for orphans in another country. And it's like, oh, man, I'd love to help with that. I'd love to give to that. I'd love to be a part of that. And you can't. Because my money is gone. It's all promised away already. Because God isn't my master. My money has become my master. And that is not a happy place, Jesus says, to be. And so the next step that Jesus is kind of leading us to is you can only have happy money when you choose the right master for your money. And the right master for money isn't money, right? You know, it's not more stuff, and you know, I love you. It's not you. Right? It is the God who made you, who actually at several different points in Scripture kind of outlines for us some pretty wise principles with how to handle and manage and use our money. For your next step today, I just want to give you one tool to work toward. And I understand as I say this, for some of us, it's going to be like, whoa, Wes, that is not doable at all. Like, Wes, you don't understand. I get it. I understand. I want to give you something to work toward. I want to give you a vision for what the future could look like because I guarantee you, as someone who's practiced this for a while, this is a peaceful place to be with your money. It is a happy place to be with your money. And it's what I call my 10-10-80 rule, okay? My 10-10-80 rule. And here's the 10-10-80 rule. You give 10, you save 10, you live on the rest. You give 10%, you save 10%, you live on the rest. Now, here's a couple things with the 10-10-80 rule. Number one, the 10-10-80 rule assumes you know what 100 is, okay? Like, I mean, here, this is honest, right? Half of America does not live on the budget, which means half of America, if I told you, hey, so what's 10? You actually couldn't tell me that because you don't know, right? So that's kind of the first step of this, right, is I need to know what 100 is, okay? And then when I figured that out, these three things are very important to finding peace. I'm just going to go through them very quickly. Give 10%, okay? First off, we're not going to pass the bags around again, okay? So you can listen with your arms and ears open, right? You can be like, oh, thank goodness, you know? Give 10%, okay? The most important thing you can do financially is make a decision to be generous. And I say that because in many, many scriptures that we don't have time to outline right here, God connects your decision to being generous with your experiencing of his blessing, okay? In fact, in a couple of scriptures, God is daring you to take him up on that offer, okay? 10% is the baseline number that scripture seems to offer us as kind of the baseline for generosity. But if you can't hit 10%, do 5%, do 2%, do half of a percent, do 8%. Any number other than zero can count as a percent, okay? I just want you to start somewhere with that decision to say, everything that comes my way and into my hands is not just going to be for me. I want to use it to bless and to help other people, whatever that looks like for you. Give it here. Give it to the Red Cross. Give it to your neighbor. You know, give it to when that kid knocks on your door, you know, and says, I'm collecting money for orphans in some country. You don't even know if it's an actual country. Just give it there. You know, do whatever you want with it, okay? But be generous. Because God will do more with your 90% than you will do with your 100%. And if you care to try me on that, ask anyone who's done that, and they will have story after story after story that they can share with you of times where it's like, oh, wow, we didn't know how we were going to make ends meet, and then groceries magically ended up on our doorstep, right? And then I got this refund check from someone I wasn't even expecting, right? My wife and I, biggest decision I ever made was a financial one, and we just got to watch God bless it in amazing ways that we never dreamed possible when we got married. And I'm just here to tell you, I'm part of the 10% club because, you know, yeah, because it does good in the world, but because I've also seen it do some really great things in my life too. And, you know, I just think that's huge. Second thing, 10% to save. And that can be a saving account. That can be a retirement thing through your work. That can be the coffee can out back, whatever that looks like for you. Your life is better when you save money. Your anxiety goes down when you save money. If you're married or dating someone, there is always a spender and there's always a saver. I am the spender. My wife is the saver. This is the lamest fight we've ever had. It's the biggest fight we've ever had in our 3.5 years of marriage was when we got a really nice tax refund check, and it was so big, I wanted to spend all of it. And my wife was like, you should save some of it. And I was like, okay, honey. Yeah, and then we fought for 2 hours, and then I admitted that she won, and we did her thing anyway. So you can learn a lot from that little scenario I just shared with you right there. But your life is better when you have money in the bank. Your food tastes better. Okay, your car runs nicer. Okay, just knowing that that's there reduces anxiety, right? The Bible in Proverbs says, foolish people spend everything they have, wise people save for the rainy day. Okay, that's the West paraphrase of Proverbs right there. You should save. That is a powerful thing to give you stress relief in your life. And then live on the rest. That's the part we're already doing really well right now anyway. You probably don't need a lot of help. Sometimes I feel like Christian people, they talk about, you know, like, well, if every cent of your dollar isn't going to, you know, Jesus, then are you a Christian, you know? And I'm like, whoa, that's a little heavy on the guilt, buddy, you know? Jesus, like God's word actually says that God has entrusted you money for you to use for your enjoyment. Right, and so the idea is actually when I fulfilled my obligations to, you know, God's kingdom in the world and to, you know, the people I owe money to, you know, when I'm in a responsible place financially, right, that God actually likes it when you enjoy what he has entrusted to you, you know, and that could be the, hey, I'm going to get the Frosty at Wendy's, you know, or I'm going to get a medium this time, wow, you know, or that could be like, hey, we're going to go on the vacation, we're going to have the glass of wine, you know, don't have 8 glasses of wine, just 1 glass of wine, okay, but whatever that is for you, that's okay, right, like that is acceptable, okay, live on the rest, but the key is you got to have the first two done, right, because that's not going to give you peace if they aren't. Right, but doing this will give you peace with God. It will give you peace with yourself. You'll feel good. It will give you peace with others because you will get to be a part of generously blessing them. You'll get to be the person that pays for dinner and does all that kind of stuff, right? Like, you get to be generous. This is a huge thing. This is a huge goal. This is not an overnight thing. This is a store up, sow up thing. I want to give you the vision for how to get there. Now, I understand this is all kind of big picture, you know, like, oh, wow, Wes, that was not necessarily that helpful. You know, Wes, if there was like $100 under my seat, that would be much more helpful. I can't do that for you. But what I can do is this. On our website, if you go to crossbridgechristian.com/happy, we actually have put up some resources on there that dive a little bit more into the nitty-gritty of how to do this. So, if you need to make a budget, we've actually created on our website a link for you to go to Mint, which is this cool online budgeting app. Our family uses it. We think it's really great. You can use an Excel spreadsheet, pen and paper, whatever works for you. That's just a tool that's up there for you to use. There are a couple books and resources like that on there that you can check out that could be helpful to you. We actually talked a little bit more in depth on finances about 1.5 years ago with a message series I think we called Strapped. And so links to all of those messages are on there as well for you to check out that dive into a little bit more of the nitty-gritty of dealing with debt. There's this technique, if debt is your thing, there's something on there called the debt snowball that you can check out. It's a very simple technique, but it will help you pay off debt. So we've been snowballing for about 1 year now, and it's made some headway for us. So if that's kind of where you are, we want to be able to help you out with that. But go on there, check it out. I hope it's helpful to you. I'm sure it's not the most all-encompassing, wonderful website, but I hope it at least gives you the first step or two to you finding financial freedom and to you discovering that happy money is not actually this cruel oxymoron. It can actually be a reality if we will sow our way there. Jesus wants you to experience this. Jesus wants you to have peace. I want that for you too. So let me pray for us to experience that, and then we'll get out of here. God, we thank you so much for you laying out for us practically your heart, and God, for just the wise insight that you have for how to make the most of our money, how to have happy money. And Jesus, I recognize all of us are in very different places. Some of us are in a place where we need to tweak a few things. Some of us are in a place where it's like, woo, need a bulldozer, you know, just do a whole overhaul. And God, wherever we find ourselves in the midst of that, I pray for your blessing in every step of the way. I pray that as we take steps to make budgets, as we take steps to reassign our money to a new master, make us its boss instead of it being our boss, God, I pray you would just bless that incredibly and amazingly and in wild ways that that help us achieve more than we dreamed or thought possible. God, help us to be happy with money. Help us to be happy, and help us most of all to lead and win people to you as they kind of see, wow, like something's different there. And that we get a chance to actually point them toward the God in heaven who made that possible. Father, we pray this in your Son's powerful name. Amen.